What is up, my party pizzas? My name is Corey Vincent, and this is, of course, the Video Game Bang, brought to you by our amazing sponsors, Oblivion Comics and Coffee, Sacramento's number one place for comics and coffee. We're brought to you by Vast GG, the number one marketeers in the esports biz. We're also brought to you by Gamersubs GG. Use that code word VGB to save yourself 10% on anything in the store. That can go from the sampler pack from $5 up to like a full tub. And I'm running low on my tubs, so it's about time for me to use code word VGB and save some money. So, this is the show. We have a great one for you. Joining us back from, I'm going to assume you called in sick because you were gearing up for Spider-Man or something. David Webb.
What's going on, everybody? I'm back. It was partly that. I really wanted to rest my voice for to stream Spider-Man. But it was all, I was all day at work. I was like, yeah, this is not going to work. But yeah, I'm back, feeling better. It's good to be back. Just thinking about playing Spider-Man right now.
You know, we're going to talk about Spider-Man. It'll probably absorb a lion's share because it's not often when a game is good enough where it gets all of us to day one by and dive right in. It's like a dialogue between two or, people, maybe three. But I think we're going to have a full roundtable of opinions because I think you guys are a little more excited about the game than I am. Someone who's got way too much excitement for this game, Emma Skies.
It's me.
What's up?
I am excited for this game, and I won't let you shame me about it. Well, I will not be game shamed.
I'm not going to game shame you. I'm just going to tell you why you're wrong.
I'm going to throw this mic at you. That's how this is going to end.
That's a real possibility.
You've been playing way too much Spider-Man.
I apologize for the audio podcast.
You've been playing way too much Spider-Man.
I'm going to fucking web-sling this thing right at your head.
I shouldn't be involved in this.
We have a very special guest on the show as well. It's very rare we get people who are like this talented because it takes a level of like commitment and talent to make video games. How many times have me and you and other people, former hosts of this show, always talked about, like, we should make a video game?
It's the same conversation when it's like, we should buy a bar.
Yeah.
It's that same conversation, but for us, it's, we should make a video game.
We should make a video
game.
How
hard could it be?
We talk about it all the time. Then you realize immediately, holy shit, this is a lot of work.
Oh, yeah.
And this guy has done it, ladies and gentlemen. He made a game. This is Gary from his indie game development company, Formal Sheep. What's going on, man?
Hey, how's it going?
We're fine. not as good as you, man, Mr. Yeah. Game Developer. Tell us about your background.
Well, I basically kind of got into the idea of making a game. I basically got into the idea of making a game back in college. I think I tried to do some sort of mobile gaming startup thing with my friends that I knew from high school, but that didn't really pan out. But it kind of like incepted that idea into my head to make a game, right?
Yeah.
I was like, wait, why am I making, like, the whole idea of the mobile game was like, because mobile games were making a ton of money, the whole idea was money, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And we're just like, wait, I'd love to play a game. That's like all I do in my free time. So, and I know how to program. So I'm just going to try to make my own game.
So you just happen to know how to program, or did you go to school for like programming and then specifically with the intent to make a video game?
No, I actually went in as mechanical engineering because, like most Asians, I'm very good at math and science.
All right.
So, actually, mechanical engineering only requires one computer science course at UCLA, which is where I went. And I actually took it my first quarter there, and that's when I instantly knew I wanted to do that. I didn't really connect, like, actually working in the game industry or anything like that, until one of my professors actually had a project where he basically had us recreate asteroids. And from there, it's just, I don't know, it just connected, and that's kind of always what I want to do. I also, coincidentally at the same time, was playing indie games like Braid. That was my first indie game that I ever played.
Oh, Braid's a good one, man.
That's a solid one.
That one has always stuck with me, like, all my life. That's actually one of the main inspirations for the game that I made. So
talk to me about the transition into, like, okay, I have the skills. How do I actually make this damn thing happen? Like, did you have a team? Did you pay people? Was it just buying people a lot of pizza? Like, how'd you do it?
Yeah, so I started by myself. I think, of course, the main skill that you need is programming. So I was lucky to have that. But there's no way that I didn't really have anyone who wanted to join me at first. So I just decided to experiment by myself.
So because, you just started going at it, plugging away.
Yeah, because after I graduated college, actually the impetus was, well, I always had the idea of like, okay, I want to make this game or some sort of game. I didn't know that I was going to make this particular one. But the impetus was after I graduated, I was like, you know, trying to go the usual route of trying to find a job. I did a few interviews. I didn't really, none of that really led to anything. So I was just like, okay, well, if I can't get into the game industry that way, then I might as well just try to make something on my own. And it was because I had a conversation with my family. They said that they would be able to actually support me in this endeavor. So I actually was able to move back home here in Elk Grove and basically not really have to worry about the finances and stuff like that. And they kind of gave me sort of the freedom to explore something artistic, right? Because that's mostly what it was. It wasn't really about the program. It's more about the artistic aspect of it. And yeah, in that sense, I was basically a starving artist.
So were you the artist as well?
No, that coincidentally, like, okay, so I worked about a year and a half prototyping different games. I started off with games that were familiar to me. Like, I remember I tried to make like a Worms clone, and I tried making like a point and click adventure game. All of those never really made it past like basic prototyping. And the game that I made, which is a puzzle platformer, sort of spawned from, at first I was going to make like an action-y platformer that was like based in sort of the Pirates of the Caribbean theme. I don't know why.
You don't need a reason, man. If you're making the shit, yeah, it was like point at something in the room. Yeah, my fucking game's about a lamp now.
Yeah, I don't know. I might revisit that idea. I called it the Lost Treasure of Booty Domus.
Hey.
Okay. All right.
So, but you know, that kind of spawned as I was programming the platforming mechanics, I was just using like black and white squares because I have no artistic ability whatsoever. And that's kind of like where I came up with the idea of the black and white space in my game.
Okay.
Because like I was designing a level and like, for example, a black box would be the floor, right? But I designed it in such a way that like I suddenly started to see it shift and like, oh, what if the white space was the floor and the black was the background? And so that's kind of where I accepted that idea. And I played around with that for a few months and prototyped some things out. And coincidentally, on a trip to Vegas, I met my then girlfriend's friend from high school. We just connected there because he just finished art school at Art Center in Pasadena. So that center is pretty infamous for producing artists that go into games or movie business. But he was looking for stuff to bolster his portfolio, and the timing just kind of worked out that he was willing to work on the game for not a whole lot of money because I was also poor. And I also had a longtime friend who was still living in Elk Grove at the time. So he also was helping me out with a lot of the non-programming, like miscellaneous stuff that kind of, you know, took some weight off my shoulders.
That's pretty insane.
So we've kind of talked a bit about like around it, but the actual game itself though is the Rabbit and the Owl. Because we've been talking around it, but I realize we haven't actually mentioned what it is yet.
Yeah, and you've streamed it. Yeah.
I did. I played it start to finish. Gary was there to watch me fail miserably at it at times, and then succeed well at others. So what? Go into like what the actual concept of this game is and how it kind of came to be.
Okay, so the game is, like I mentioned before, Braid was one of my main inspirations. So actually that game, it is a puzzle platformer which uses the idea of negative space in which there's two characters. So each level is split up into a light and dark areas, and there's a character in each one. So in the dark areas, there's a white rabbit, and then the light areas is a black owl. And essentially they can move around in their own spaces, but they can't move into the other ones. But they can pull levers or interact with the environment in such a way that they can sort of indirectly help each other get to goals at the end of the level. So it builds on the idea of cooperation. And I mean, originally it kind of built into like a two-player thing. At first it was actually solo, but it kind of built into a two-player thing, which I think was really great. And yeah, that's the game. Basically.
You it looks like you did a Kickstarter on this thing.
Yeah.
And you set a pretty reasonable goal of 5K.
Yeah.
And then you ended up crushing that with like 14. Well, how did you garner that kind of support for the project?
I have no idea, honestly.
Like, was it just all viral marketing, social media? Were you going out and hustling events? Like, I mean, those are big boy numbers right there.
Okay, so at the time, do you remember I mentioned I tried to do some sort of mobile gaming startup thing?
Uh-huh.
So there was a program at UCLA called Startup UCLA. That's where I started that at first. So I actually came back to it years later and reapplied for that program again. So that program is essentially a 10-week accelerator program where they give you a few $1,000s and they give you access to mentorships and networking opportunities in sort of the tech community. And so I applied for that again for my game, and I was timing that to my Kickstarter. And essentially, while I was there, I basically, first I just looked around at other indie games that seemed to fund really well. But through this program, I was actually able to get a bunch of supporters who could fund me day one, because from what I hear, at Kickstarter, the more money it makes the first day, the more likely it is to be more successful and show up on people's
activity. So you're playing the system, man. You're breaking the algo.
Well, actually, that actually also comes directly from the games coordinator, Anya Combs. She works at Kickstarter, and she works directly to reach out to developers like me. And she told me to do that. So
nice.
That's smart.
Yeah, because, that's usually how it works for a lot of things. Like, if things are trending, then it appears more and more. And I was also coupling that with, believe it or not, Facebook ads, which I don't know how or why, but it got a lot of reaction from it. Because I essentially targeted people between ages 18 and, 35, so, gamers.
Mm-hmm.
And gamers who also liked pages like Portal, or Limbo, or any of those other games that had to do with my games or puzzle games, right?
Yeah.
And once that started getting a lot of shares and likes and comments, it was almost every day I get a bunch of shares. I got a lot of traffic from that as well. And I think at the time, Kickstarter probably didn't have as many projects as it does now. I think year on year, every platform like Kickstarter or Steam gets more and more projects, so it becomes harder and harder to be more visible. But I think at least in 2016, when I had that Kickstarter, it wasn't too bad, and I think I was trending at some point. So I did get a lot of visitors and therefore a lot of supporters for the game.
That's it's such a good genre of game that I think it's getting the amount of appreciation nowadays that it deserves. But I don't think they're indie, but who makes Ori? That's a big boy.
It's Microsoft.
Developer. Yeah,
that's Microsoft Studios.
But Ori, Limbo,
Portal, the Turing Test, the Bridge—they kind of all fit into that.
Similar. But the ones that are really kind of hinging on the artistic value, like this game has a lot of artistic value. When you go through your pages and look through find it on Steam and everything, it's just a beautiful looking game. It's got that beautiful black and white art in the back. The choice of where it decides to use color and how. It's super, I could see why this game crushed its Kickstarter just by the presentation. And I watched Emma stream it too, and it was intriguing.
Yeah.
Do you find that this is your niche, or are you wanting to do something vastly different with your next one, like Booty Island?
Yeah, Booty Island would definitely be the mobile gaming kind of mainstream thing. Yeah, it's kind of odd because I'm not a huge puzzle platformer player. I did play Braid and Limbo, but those are I've only played maybe three or four of these types of games. I guess the reason why I chose this niche is because if I was going to have an opportunity to make a game, this was going to be, likely this was going to be my only shot, because I was, you know, when I started, I just was fresh out of college.
Yeah.
I didn't have any responsibilities. I could live at home for free, all that stuff, right? So I wanted to make something more lasting and, you know, something that I could be, you know, proud of. I didn't want to, like, make something that was like a fire and forget kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, do you still approach it? Like, that was super interesting what you said. Like, you know, this is like my one shot to do something. But now that you've done it, did it meet your expectations of like what you want to do with your life and success to where you're going to, this is your path now, is you're a full fledged game developer, or are you still kind of in that, you know, I'm going to go get a normal job or.
Oh, well, okay. First of all, I am extremely proud of the game and how it turned out. But like a lot of other indie game developers, we are experiencing a huge plethora of games that are out. And, you know, so far hasn't made like, it hasn't really projected as well as I thought it would. You know, at least compared to the Kickstarter, comparing that to kind of the how well it's doing now, it's not really matched. But having said that, yes, I am trying to sort of transition into a more normal life. I'm actually studying for like a software engineering job right now, like, you know, trying to get that done because that's essentially like an entrance exam.
So you do that though, are you still planning on, so you're planning on doing other games off to the side and having that be like your side hustle, is
your 9-to-5?
Yeah, you have a 9-to-5 kind of. Okay.
Yeah, so the idea is to get something that is not extremely intensive, as like, you know, I don't want like a job that requires like 70-hour weeks. Ideally, like you know, like a normal 40-hour-a-week job and still make games on the side. Like right now, I am heavily thinking about making some sort of RPG, but that's kind of sorry. That is
you're fine.
Still on the very early stages. So.
Is like working for or applying for major game developers just like not interesting to you whatsoever? Are you the type where it has to be your project and your vision and you're executing? Because like, to me, my thoughts as a total non-creative like you would be like, hey, this dude's got some like balls of steel. He went out there and made a badass game that even if it didn't make the money he thought it was, any game developer with a brain would look at this guy and be like, hey, I want a guy like that on my team. Yeah. Contributing to my projects, and we have a VC funding from this. So like, you know, is that an option for you too, or are you just sold out to indie, you want to execute your vision?
That was my mentality a few years ago. Like, yeah, I want to like do my own thing, have complete creative control over it. Of course, that led to me having to do a lot of, you know, put on a lot of hats at the same time. But I am totally not opposed to working for a major company now. Like,
dude, that seems to be the goal, because like, even with the thing like this show, like the show, you know, it has never been huge IGN level giant bomb, right? Status gamertag radio, but through it and through the creation process and learning in the ins and outs of it and collaboration with other people and the interviews, it led to a full-time job in the gaming industry, which I'm so blessed to have. And you know, David's got side gigs now where he's making money in the gaming world, and you know, it's like became real through in I consider what you did by making this fucking brilliant game twice, three times, five times cooler than anything we've ever done. Like, and you did it all in your own volition, picked a team, you know, did the Kickstarter, ran a successful campaign, did social media for it, got it on the store. Like, that's fucking experience. So like, I think what you did is insane.
Yeah, that's a resume for sure.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
You just walk in and drop down your game and be like, all right.
And he went to college.
Yeah, like, my drop. He went to college. That is a good one in the industry. That's not always there.
Yeah, so it's like, it's pretty, don't sell yourself short at all. And I think what you did is insane. I definitely want to play the game. I haven't had a chance to yet, but because I feel like I've watched Emma play it for hours. So I want to get in there. but it's super interesting. So your next steps then, as far as the gaming part, then are you still like managing this game, or is it just kind of like managing itself as you figure the rest of your stuff out?
Yeah. So I'm still trying to outreach to people, like media sites and, you know, old contacts and everything like that. And it's kind of weird because I don't really know how to really market it nowadays. I just kind of, oh, here's a Facebook group, let's post here. Here's a Discord, here's a Discord channel, let's post here. You know, hit up every email that I can find, anyone that's open to like just send them anything, I will send it to them. But that's kind of like kind of put on the side a little bit. Like, the game is still, it's not like completely dead or anything. And I still think it has potential. Actually, there is one thing maybe I shouldn't mention, but I am very likely to get on a certain console that is very good for indie games right now. So,
It's Disney, everybody. It's Disney.
Podcast listeners, if you could see Emma's face right now, her eyes got huge.
I think you should stay on the PC just because consoles are garbage. But no, you got to make money, dude, and that's where the plebs are who spend the money.
Don't listen to Corey; he's a bad person.
Yeah. Well, this unnamed console has a very a pretty new indie game scene, and it very much represents what Steam used to be. If you know, I would think if I was able to release my game on Steam like 3 years ago, it would be doing a lot better than it is now. But since they kind of removed the sort of walled garden sort of status of Steam,
okay,
in which a lot of games just kind of half finished get on there, it just becomes hard to stand out. But yes, there is a certain unnamed console that I believe is, at least for now,
he's bringing it to the Ouya.
You guys heard it here first.
He's bringing it to the Ouya, confirmed.
Ouya and Sega Dreamcast.
Sega Dreamcast.
Oh, go ahead.
I interviewed a dude. It was like our first show when we moved to the new format, and it was our first show under Nerd Reactor. We had an interview with an indie game dev named Raf Van Lierop.
Yeah, I remember him.
He's a main guy on Neverending Nightmare. That was Gilgenbach. What's Raf's game? It's that survival.
It was
Into
pre-web.
The Deep Dark.
Oh,
the Long Dark.
Long Dark.
Gosh, I almost forgot.
Oh, I know that game.
Yeah, The Long Dark, super popular indie game. He came from AAA, and this was his biggest indie game with Hinterland Game Studio. And he put it out early access right around the time he came on the show. I believe it's out fully now. He had big time voice actors in it, and he did everything. It was one of my most educational interviews. I learned so much from that one. But at the end, I remember asking him the question, the most important part about game development. And he cut through the chase straight through. And what I loved about the honesty was marketing.
Yeah.
He's like, there's going to be other games out there, hundreds of other games that are at our level, maybe even better. But you'll never hear about them because they don't have the marketing.
Yeah.
So when he was – and when I – like two years later, when they were doing E3 and Xbox was doing like the, hey, we love indie, you know, look at all these indie titles we have. Raf Van Lierop, Long Dark was the first thing on there on the big stage of E3. It wasn't like a full 2 minute vignette, but it was in the indie section. But still, like, that's massive exposure.
Oh, yeah.
Front page of the marketplace. The marketing that he talked about to us about before, like, got exposed to so many different people. So, yeah, that marketing it's tricky.
Yeah.
To kind of go back a little bit, a few minutes ago, we were talking about like the artistry of the game. So I'm kind of backpedaling a little bit. So we were talking about the visuals of it, and you had mentioned that it's all hand drawn, right?
Yeah, my artist did everything in Photoshop. So, but I would say technically it's hand drawn because he had a tablet and he had a stylus, and he just did it with this.
Fair enough.
Everything. So.
And one of the things that struck me every single time I open up the game, because it's the first thing you notice when you open up the game, is the music. The music in this game is incredible. I think I talked about it every single time I turned it on. There's a bundle on Steam. You can get the game and the soundtrack, which is 100% what I recommend getting. Like, and I've always been a little bit curious. How does that go together? Because the music feels very integral to the game. It feels like it fits very well. Do you have a big part of that? Do you find somebody and tell them what your vision is, and then they kind of go off and do it? Like, how does that work out? And how do you find that person?
So I got lucky with my composer. He actually is... Okay, let me try to remember the connection. He's my brother. No, not my brother. My friend's brother's. No, my friend's sister's husband's brother-in-law. No, half-brother.
Something like that. Nailed it.
Yeah,
I nailed it. For sure.
Okay. It's a small universe kind of a thing.
Anyways, this guy produced music for fun. He did sort of like chill electronic music in the past. So he knows how to use it like Ableton and all that. And also, he has one of his best friends that he roomed with when he went to college. He's actually a music major and teaches band at a high school right now. He also worked on the music as well for the piano aspects of it. And coincidentally, I actually went with this guy. I went to middle school with this guy.
Oh, my gosh.
A long time ago. So, that's small insane. World.
It all Jeez. Just comes back around.
Yeah. But... before that guy came on board, it was just, that long-winded connection guy, the half-brother. His name's David, and I'm really bad at describing music and sound. I just, like, linked him a bunch of, like, music that I, like, wanted similar styles to. And one of the main things was, like, I wanted a feeling of sort of teetering on the edge of, you know, optimism and despair, because the game, it looks like, if you don't know anything about the game, there's a lot of cooperation and, you know, it looks cute and all that, but it's got a pretty sad story to it.
Did you write the story yourself?
Yeah.
Nice.
I wrote it. Of course, had a lot of iterations on it, but I actually wrote it soon after playing Dark Souls 3. So I was like,
so we know where
so
the
you were crushed.
So I was really crushed, and I was like inspired by it.
So we know where the despair part came from.
Yes.
Where did the optimism part come from?
Finishing the game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I do remember having many long nights just like talking with my sound or my music producer, and we went through multiple iterations. And of course, you know, we want to use piano in the music because, you know, oh, it's black and white, and pianos have black and white keys too. And I've always been biased towards the piano as an instrument since I grew up, you know, playing piano. So I honestly, like, I gave him a lot of
just reference material.
Reference points, yeah. But he actually came up with a lot of it himself, and it just worked perfectly. Like, it's one of those connections, those rare connections you have when, you know, you just have the same mindset about, you know, what is supposed to fit for a project. And I got really lucky with him. And he said he probably, you know, after doing this, he probably wouldn't, like, do something like this again. But
it was a lot of work.
Unless it was with you, of course, right?
Yeah, it was a lot of work for him. But it was, yeah.
It turned out so good. I still turn on, like, I'll just be, like, doing whatever on my computer and just pull that up on Steam because I have the little thing. I'll just listen to music. It's so good.
That's really awesome to hear.
I always find the most intriguing thing is when the developers throw those little Easter eggs that they like to keep secret and they never tell people about. Did you throw in little hidden messages and secret subliminal things in your game at all? Like, was that a blip on your radar?
Kind of, with the achievements, I guess. Like, I do some of the achievement names, if you look at them and what you have to do to achieve them, I do have some references, like one to Star Wars, one to Watchmen, like stuff like that. But in terms of Easter eggs,
there's no string of code in there that has some jilted lover's name in there, or somebody who said you would, someone who said you'd never beaten amount to anything. Fuck you, bro! Somewhere in the back of a level.
I'm actually surprised I didn't really add anything much of that, because I guess I wanted to keep it kind of serious. But
okay,
there is one thing though, in the story. So the way the story structured is that there's between every few levels, there's a painting and a caption. And in one of the captions, there's the name Marie, which is the first and last time that's ever mentioned. That has nothing to do with anything except one of my backers who, you know, paid $250 for the game, like, asked to put his granddaughter in the game. So, that's and cool. he wanted something where it was, like, something to do with butterflies and rainbows. So if you look at the painting, she's surrounded by a storm of butterflies, and it's a rainy day, and she's in a field, and, you know, she's really happy. So
I remember dang, that one.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That was, like, totally dedicated to that guy.
See, here I go thinking of, like, petty little dumb things. You can put a penis in the bag of the book. And you went through and did something awesome. That's dope, man.
Or there was, what was that part where I was, because you were, what was really cool is you were hanging out when I was streaming it. You were, like, in chat, which was both awesome and terrifying. Because all I could think was, like, I'm playing this game for the first time, and somebody that designed it and has seen everything a million times is watching me miserably fail.
Be like Insomniac.
But there was
tuning into your stream last night.
There was one point where I had, like, was doing something over and over again, and you're like, this isn't the way you're supposed to do it. And then it worked.
Yeah, I remember that. That was when you were trying to, was that the flying up and using momentum?
And it wasn't, like, it's not the way you're supposed to do it, but for some reason it worked.
Yeah, you know, I got to thank you for finding at least 3 or 4 game-breaking bugs just because.
Where I did something so wrong. That nobody else that had tested the game had done it. And I was like, cool.
But I was glad that you found him. So I did change that. But
oh really? Did you actually patch?
Yeah,
make a patch?
I've made a few patches based on what I've seen people play, mostly from Emma's mistakes.
So is there there's an Emma hotfix?
Let's say, is there an Emma achievement in there for that flying?
No, unfortunately not. But I should have added it as a footnote to my patch notes.
So people who are listening to this game, where can they go find the game, and like what's the price of it? How do you acquire this title?
So the game again is called The Rabbit and the Owl, and you can find it on Steam. That's the only place you can find it at the moment, and it is for PC and Mac. And right now it costs $11.99. But you could stay put because I think I'm gonna put it on sale like in 2 days.
This episode comes out in 2 days. Yeah. So if you're listening to this and it's Monday, go check it out on the Steam. You got to go check it on the Steam store anyways, and it may be on sale.
Yeah.
If you're in chat right now, I've posted the link in there. If you want to follow that link and bookmark that and save it.
Yeah.
It's so good.
I have just one final question I've been meaning to ask you this entire time. I'll just ask it right now. I can't because the What You Playing theme song. Oh, no. What you playing? Come on, guys. I wanted to ask him a question. All right. Well, I was going to ask you the most important question of the show, but unfortunately I can't because the What You Playing gods have decided to bestow upon us a game, and the game is called What You Playing. The rules are simple. Gary, all you got to do is tell us what you've been playing. I won't even make you go first because, I mean, trust me, it's a lot of pressure. So we'll start with David Webb. What you been playing, man?
Spider-Man.
Period.
Period. That's it. Yeah. That's all you need to know. It's like share Spider-Man. I'll talk more about it when we talk about the game because it's in the news. But this is definitely one of the most fun. I mean, I think when I streamed it last night, I don't think there were many times where I did not have a fat smile on my face, especially swinging through the city. I just sat there with a big ass grin on my face, swinging through. I wasn't even doing a mission. I was just swinging. I was just exploring New York.
See, okay, that's good. It's good. I'm happy for you.
Yeah,
I'm very happy for you. I think we should just retitle it from What You're Playing to Spider-Man today, because I know for sure Emma purchased it day one. I bought day one. I went to a child's birthday party this morning at like 10 a.m. With your wife.
Yeah,
she was, well, I didn't go with her. She was there. My wife was there, guys. All right. So
moving on.
Thank you. She was like, David said it's the best game of all time. Okay, I'm exaggerating.
Okay.
She did say David said this is the best game of the year.
No, you know what? She overheard me at night during my stream because somebody did say, is this game of the year? And I go, ooh, I don't know if it's game of the year.
So why not? I mean, you're is it your maybe your personal game of the year? Are you able to separate it? Like, this is for me, but.
You know what? Okay, me alone, I would probably say it's game of the year. Like, for many reasons. It's not like there are things that I can say that are frustrating about the game. There are some glitches that I experienced, but being that it's Spider-Man has always been like one of my favorite superheroes, and the fact that it's the first Spider-Man game I've played where I've actually legitimately felt like I was Spider-Man and I'm swinging through the city. There's no guards or anything on it. Like, I just feel like I just have free roam. The personality, I feel, is very accurate to Spider-Man. So personally, I would probably say that this is probably one of the highlighted games of my year. But objectively speaking, in the gaming world sense, I don't know.
You're not holding your breath for it to actually win the title.
I think it might be a contender, but I don't think it's a contender that's going to win.
Okay.
That's about what I said, because you were talking about that on your
show. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think my answer to that was no, it's probably not, because Red Dead Redemption 2 is going to wreck everything in its path this
and
year.
And that's before you came in. That's why I said, we have Fallout 76, we have Smash Bros, we have Red Dead Redemption. Those three big titles coming out that come out towards the end of the year. And it seems to be like the games that come out, it's like the Oscars. Like, mm-hmm. If it comes out towards the end of the year, it has a really good chance because it's fresh on everybody's mind. Versus, like, I mean, it's September, so it's not like it's the beginning of the year. But yeah. Still.
Emma, what are your thoughts on the game so far?
I really, really, really like it. I really like it.
Do you like it, or do you like it?
I like it.
Ooh, girl!
It's really good. I had an idea of what I thought it would be going in, and it's pretty much what I thought it was going to be, and which is fantastic. What we were talking about earlier is, I mentioned
spectacular.
It is spectacular, which is, yeah, I see what you're doing there.
Yeah.
We were talking about this earlier, and that this game is so similar to Arkham.
Oh my god! Yeah,
that I don't know how it's not getting sued.
Yeah.
There are times when you're playing it and it feels like a reskinned Arkham, which to me is not a bad thing, because they're fantastic games, and it's like that's kind of the template you want to follow a lot of times for good comic book games.
Yeah.
The combat system, like the fluid combat, I think Arkham Asylum kind of like was the cutting edge of that at its for you know when it came out.
I mean, it followed the trend of Assassin's Creed.
It was way better than Assassin's Creed, though.
But it took a lot of cues from it. Yeah. Shadows of Mordor has a very similar combat system. It was like it definitely was in the forefront, though. Like,
yeah.
And I think what Spider-Man does, at first I was a little pissed about it, but it's a little bit better now that I'm getting more used to it, is it's more difficult.
Oh, yeah.
Batman, you could have an army of literally 300 people, and they all, for some reason, like a real comic book, only swing one at a time.
Right,
and you can just sit there and counter unlimited times. If you just mash counter, you'll win eventually.
Yeah, exactly.
This, like, I died like 3 or 4 times just before we get to the first part of the thing.
Oh, yeah, the Wilson Fisk thing?
Yeah, with Kingpin.
Yeah.
I died 3 or 4 times, and I was, like, getting mad at myself. I was like, do I just suck at video games now?
What difficulty are you on?
Medium.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, amazing, I think.
Wow. Yeah, I'm on medium. You guys both suck. I'm on hard.
Why did you do hard? I was watching your stream, and I had to stop watching because you were dying too much. I was like, okay, this is the Emma die stream.
It's not bad. There's been a couple fights. The Wilson Fisk fight, I died quite a few times.
Oh, it took me so long to get past that.
I watched you at the first Fisk construction yard.
Yeah, that one was rough.
Yeah.
The first construction yard, when you're getting used to it, now that I've got more gadgets and I'm more used to the playstyle, the other thing that I was having, and I'm still having a big problem with, is I'm playing on PlayStation because it's a PS4 exclusive, but I am accustomed to the Xbox. So I can't, every time it gives me a button prompt, I'm like, what the fuck is circle? What is that?
Yeah, it's taking me forever, like, especially when it's a time thing. Like, there's a couple things when you're trying to stop a car, and you have to time it just right. And I'm like, and it says, like, mash triangle. But which was triangle? And then, like, I die. I miss it.
And I keep trying to use triangle as the block, because in Arkham, it's Y, which is in the triangle spot. But in this one, it's killing me. Which is not a fault of the game. It's a fault of my brain not understanding.
Yeah. I think going back to like the fighting style in the Arkham, I think that although it is a very, very similar, almost copy paste, it makes more sense as Spider-Man than Batman to me.
Yeah.
Because like Spider-Man is that he's very like nimble, and he's sliding around, and he's bouncing back and forth and sliding in between legs and stuff like that. And Batman, like, he doesn't seem like, from what I've seen in like, in like movies and like the cartoon series and stuff like that, he wasn't like a grappler like that. Mm-hmm.
He's got a big heavy suit on.
Yeah, he is a hand-to-hand combat kind of guy. He's not like a, you know,
I feel like Arkham did it right though. Like
right, it's not wrong.
He feels like tanky when you're playing it. Like compared to like Batman's hitting
people. The hits he lands are solid.
Yeah. Spider-Man's uppercutting and then up in the air and beating the shit out of people. Like he's super, it's like the Arkham fighting system on crack.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
Have you been seeing a lot of the Spider-Man stuff?
No, besides I mentioned off air just the fact that they have really good polish and that they have two voice lines for Peter Parker. One's like exerted voice lines when he's like doing stuff like fighting or swinging on buildings, and one's like when he's just sitting still. And I think that's really awesome. But I would love to play the game. You guys make it sound so
it's
amazing.
So good. Wait,
I haven't talked yet, so you may want to not.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm not against the game, but I'm definitely going to rain on this parade a little bit.
Corey's got some criticisms that we
and if it's the ones you mentioned in chat, I don't disagree.
I think what I loved about Arkham City was how they did the storylines.
Mm-hmm.
You had your main quest, you know, your main storyline, of course, that was so good.
Uh-huh.
But then scattered around the city, there were other quality storylines going on with cutscenes and mechanics that were different from the main, but made it interesting to follow, that went through multiple missions, so to speak. So it's more of like a GTA, right? Where you can go, today I think I want to work on the Two-Face storyline real quick and just round that one up before I move on and take on Killer Croc, and then I'll jump back to the main campaign.
Right.
And that made the world feel more alive and interesting, and mm-hmm. the storylines, you could kind of, I'm in the area. Let's go beat the shit out of Joker real quick.
Right? Yeah.
In this one, you have your main quest, and then everything else is literally just feels like fluff.
I have to agree. I thought that was Shocker. I started this sentence without realizing that might give spoilers away. I would agree. the one thing that I did notice that I haven't done yet, and maybe you guys, I don't know if you guys have done it yet, but there's the main storyline, and then there's like the little things that you unlock, like you have to unlock, like fix the radio towers and stuff like that. But I have something on my map that actually says side mission.
Yeah, the blue ones.
Yeah. The blue ones. The blue markers. I haven't done any of those yet.
Okay. Well, they're cool. And they're a step in the right direction, but they're all one shots.
Mm-hmm.
And typically don't include any bad guys you've heard of. I haven't experienced any yet, but one was...
And they're definitely more few and far between.
Yeah. Yeah. One was like, there's a copycat Spider-Man around. So like you kind of go from crime scene to crime scene, do a quick little investigation, find him, and then you confront him, and it's kind of cool.
Uh-huh.
So they're like that.
Okay.
Which, again, it's okay, but I'm not like jumping out of my chair. Like, I went and collected all the backpacks today.
Okay.
And Emma has only had the game for a day, and she's already 46% done with the game itself.
Jeez.
I mean, I'm playing a lot.
That true, but still, like a day and you're already halfway through, and most of that is probably going to be collectibles by the time you're done.
And I'm wondering if that's why we're getting a DLC so quickly. Like, we have a DLC next month.
We're gonna get the Black Cat DLC. I will be shocked if we don't get Venom DLC that coincides with the movie.
Oh, good. Yeah, good thought.
Yeah.
Because there's not a Venom sighting, but I did see an Eddie Brock sighting in game in one of the backpacks. There's a card that's signed to Peter by Eddie Brock, so clearly that's in there. And if we I feel like if we don't get that, like, that would be a completely missed opportunity. But it is Sony, so I feel like it's coming.
What do you guys think about if you think they should, or you think it's okay without having cameos from other New York heroes? Like,
I wish they would.
Like, if I'm swinging through Hell's Kitchen, like, I want something to where maybe I do a one shot with Daredevil, or I see him. You know what I mean? Or some like. You kind of have Easter eggs with like the little side stuff, like you take your pictures of landmarks and pictures of like, you know, things from Daredevil, or I haven't done anything from Luke Cage yet, but like you take a picture of Doctor Strange's house and stuff like that, where it's you're in the universe, but I want to see something.
Or even just mentioning that they exist.
Well, they exist, like. Everything in the Marvel lore, like Hell's Kitchen, is there, and you can go to their law firm. And
Hell's Kitchen is a real place.
Yeah,
It is?
Yeah.
I know. I'm not asking for
Avengers.
I didn't know until I was there.
Oh, really?
I thought it was just a Daredevil thing, and then I was in New York, and I was staying in Hell's Kitchen. I was like, oh, shit.
I got an Airbnb in Hell's Kitchen, and Elizabeth was like, oh, we're going to stay in Hell's Kitchen? I was like, are you fucking crazy? The Kingpin's there.
Fisk is going to kill us. Yeah. I'm not asking for Avengers. Like, I'm not expecting Cap. But I think the Defenders would be cool.
Yeah.
I think that they're at that level to where you could see a cameo from one of them.
I want to see what happens. Okay, first of all, one thing about the game that is spectacular is the environment.
Yeah.
Yes.
It is New York.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Times Square is where Times Square is supposed to be.
Yeah.
The photo thing, like, a big part of it is taking photos of landmarks. They're all well-placed, to scale.
Yeah.
Like, it takes a solid, like, just about fucking 10 minutes of web slinging to get from one side of the city to the other.
Oh, yeah.
And the web slinging, like David said, is a joy. Like, they did a good job of not making it just holding right trigger.
Right.
And you can't, like, in past games, you shoot up into the clouds and you're still web slinging.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They don't give a shit.
Yeah.
But in this, like, you have to find a fucking building and there's tricks to, like, get max speed.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's an art in that
there's
game.
There's a power up to do air tricks so you can do, like, flips for extra XP.
Oh, I just unlocked that.
That's my favorite. I'm, like, doing backflips all over the fucking city.
You guys are dumb. Like, you guys are so dumb. You save that for the last part. I got, like, bulletproof. Like, I go through all. I don't care if I can do a flip.
I did get the jail inserts.
Corey went up and got the one of the suits gives you a new upgrade.
It's like
that you
armored
get,
spider
armored,
mark 4 or whatever.
So you can
it's
get,
called.
You can be bulletproof. That's a suit ability. I feel like that's cheating.
If it's in the game and it's a suit, I feel like you guys are, like, not thinking, like, playing that's the cheating. Game smart. Like, every time, maybe, you know, last week we had David Ng on the show. He's a guy who every time we played a game, he would find a way to cheese the system. He'd be like, oh, if you equip this rune with this one, you have unlimited ghost arrows. And I'm like, what? I didn't even know ghost arrows were in this game. But he's like, no, but you can only get it here. And then if you talk to this person, but hit B and then up and then do it over and over again, it'll max out your charisma and then you'll never have to worry. So he would break games.
He would, yeah.
So anytime I play games, I go through and look for the most OP abilities and try and, like, level them out. I think, what would David do?
What would David Ng do?
To break this fucking game. So, like, when I saw bulletproof, I was like, god damn. Yeah. What do I have now? I don't even know what focus is. I'm going bulletproof.
Going back to the swinging thing, and not, you have to be around buildings, and I figured that out the hard way because I thought maybe it was going to be like they were going to cheese it, you know, and so I swung through and I hit the Central Park and I'm hitting the trigger to swing a web and I'm just falling. I'm like, shit, this is bad.
Yeah, when you get in the, like, you're in the middle of the park and you're, like, trying to get low enough to hit the trees maybe.
Yeah.
You're just skimming the grass. I'm like, this is dumb. But yeah,
there is no there's no fall damage, there's no crashing into the ground, and there's no crashing into the side of a building, which I was a little bit sad about because I face planted into a building at one point and he just runs up it.
Yeah.
And I was like, aw, man.
I think the building I think maybe slamming into a building too fast, if you don't hit the right button in time to go from swinging into a run, I think maybe you should take some damage. I'm okay without fall damage though because he doesn't really take fall damage. Yeah. He's Spider-Man.
I just wanted to smack into the side of a building. That's all I wanted to do.
You wanted him to go flat like a pancake and slide down. Oh my! You know, we'll talk about the real hero of this game, Spider-Cop.
Spider-Cop!
Oh my god, yes!
Spider-Cop!
We won't say much more than that, but the real hero of the new Spider-Man game is Spider-Cop.
He deserves a promotion.
I went to the Reddit thread because, here's another thing we got to talk about too, is we all pre-ordered at Best Buy.
Oh, yeah.
And they're having some issues.
Yeah.
I actually went to the Best Buy today and started getting my own interrogation skills on.
You got your Spider Cop on.
Yeah, I turned into Spider Cop myself. And they it's a known issue with the developer. I guess there was so many, like, kind of last second and last couple few week reserves that it screwed up the system, so they have to come up with more codes to send out to people. So they're giving people like a 48-hour thing. So by the time you listen to this, you should have it. If you don't, then you should call the retailer and see what the plan, call whoever you did it from. But don't bug Insomniac because it's all done through your retailer.
It's all done through. Okay.
And they're supposed to email you.
So let's talk about that. So we all ordered from Best Buy. And I think this is a thing that was only with Best Buy. You get Destiny 2 for free.
Yeah.
When you pre-order the game.
Yep.
Aw.
Which
I dropped 60 for
the
that.
Guy, the guy I talked to at Best Buy, he was like, yeah, we're out of stock, but it's free on the PS the PlayStation store. I'm like, yeah, but then I only have it if I have PlayStation Plus. Like, I want a hard copy. So, but they were, that store was out of stock. Any store in the area was out of stock. Online was out of stock. Like, it's crazy. Like, a lot of people are getting it, but I don't know.
So before we move on to the next topic, David Webb, what do you give the game?
Oh.
Out of 10. We'll give it.
Out of 10?
Out of 10 Spider Cops. What do you give it?
Out of 10 Spider Cops. I would give it, and this is like a personal for me. This is like an actual game review thing. Would say, give it a 7.5 or 8.
Okay,
give it around there.
That's fair.
There are things that it does really well, and then there's things where it gets really frustrating. As much as we talked about how cool the fighting was, there are aspects of the fighting to where it gets really frustrating. I experienced a game breaking bug last night. It was really frustrating. I got stuck in a piece of debris when I was fighting the shocker.
No.
And I'm like, there's nothing I can do right now but just stand here. And I was still taking damage, but I couldn't move. I couldn't do anything. So it was really frustrating. But there are things, I think there are more things that it does well than it does wrong.
Emma, out of 10. 10 Spider Cops, what do you give it?
8.
8?
8.
Okay. Based off of your guys, I'm lowering mine. I'm going to give it 6.
Wait.
It was 6.
Okay.
I was originally thinking 7, but just to be consistent with your guys' scales, because I feel like you guys are definitely more optimistic about it, I'm lowering mine to something more realistic. 6.
What?
I think Arkham City, like, honestly, if you're the type of guy who wants to play what's new, play Spider-Man. But if you want to play what's the best in this genre, go buy Arkham City still.
Arkham Knight's better than Arkham City. Don't fight me.
No.
Actually, no. Do fight me.
Okay.
Arkham Knight is better
after
than
the show,
City.
We're going to fight.
We're gonna turn this into like a cage.
Steel cage match?
Yeah.
Oh. Pff.
Let's fucking go.
Homie, it's on.
We're going to leave the cameras where they are, though, so you get like a nice round
view. Do you like popcorn here? Huh? Do you like popcorn?
I love popcorn.
All right, you and I are just going to have popcorn. Yeah.
Let's go ahead and move on to Gary, man. What you been playing?
I'm typically more of a online or multiplayer gamer, but I've been playing Overwatch since it came out.
Let's go! All right, what are you playing on? Platform?
PC.
Let's go! Oh,
I don't actually own a console. So.
Oh my god!
This man has more balls than I do because he developed the game and he said fuck consoles. I have to do it by the nature of this occupation. Otherwise, I'd be just like him. So let's talk some Overwatch then. What do you? What's your rank?
Well, right now I kind of hover between Diamond and Master.
This guy's he's legit.
That's yeah.
One time in season 2, I was 50 SR from top 500.
Oh.
But I lost like 3 games in a row after that. I was like,
that's the worst. Were you right there?
I was right there.
You could smell it, and you could taste the next rank, and then you just have like this shit losing streak, and then it's like,
What's your role? Who's your main?
Well, I used to be exclusively, like literally exclusively Genji main. And I know, I know what it's like to be like. It's funny because since then I've diversified to basically just filling. I mean, I prefer DPS, but I diversify to filling, and then it's so funny when I see on the enemy team a Genji, right? And you know he plays a lot of Genji, and you just pick every single thing to counter him, and he's just too stubborn. Like I'm gonna kill this Pharah. I'm gonna kill this Pharah, and he just tries to like hit you with his stars and dash you, and it just does like nothing to you. And yeah, I think
so. You realize the error of your ways back when you were hardcore Genji.
That is one of the things that. I love and don't like about Overwatch. I love it because there is the ability to switch and like change your comp around, but I don't like it because at least in pub games, people just don't do that. So,
do you follow the Overwatch League at all?
No, I watched the finals, but that's it.
There was a big announcement that just came out that they're expanding into 8 new markets.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's big. That's almost...
It's like 3 in China.
Yeah.
In the East
Coast. So the actual cities, they have Vancouver, in Toronto, so Canada getting some big love. Paris is the only EU team. For the United States, we got Washington, D.C., Atlanta, and then China gets three teams, Hangzhou, Chengdu, and Guangzhou. Sorry for that pronunciation.
I think you nailed it.
For the three people who listen to this show that live in China, I apologize. But yeah, that league's growing quite fast. Do you find yourself in matches with pros up at that level?
On their Smurfs, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, you could definitely tell. Like, you know, you think Masters is pretty good, and then I get wrecked by people who are actually, like, really good.
Oh, yeah, that was Sinatra.
Yeah.
that was Keffrey. Yeah. No problem.
Well, we said pros, not Keffrey.
Oh, yeah.
Damn.
Got him.
Shots fired.
Wow.
Damn. Yeah. No, that's exciting. So you're going to add me and carry me up to that level, right? Because
I'm always looking for more people to play with.
I'm platinum.
Serious about it.
But I could learn. I could learn.
I do have three accounts total. So.
Oh, so you're
so you're hardcore.
You're hardcore.
Well, I got those early on because, you know, with the SR, like, you can't queue with people in a certain range. I had, like, some gold and silver friends, so I, like, made
it. My friends all suck, so I had to make another account for them.
Yeah, that's how it goes, man. That's how it goes.
I definitely always prioritize playing with friends over just, like, oh, you got to be good. Like, I don't like that kind of mentality, you know?
I have one account that's, like, the Corey Tryhard, and, like, I will start getting tilted with my friends if I play. So I try not to play with my friends on that one. Then I have the other one where I'll kick back some beers and then have some fun and, like, what the fuck? What do you want me to play? All right, I'm Wrecking Ball now, bitch. Like, let's go. I don't care.
Battle Mercy.
Battle Mercy.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. The World Cup is going on today. It's been incredible watching Team USA just smash and then meme people.
They're killing it.
They played the first match, Austria.
Oh,
and by the time they hit Rialto, Moth, who's the support player, was on, like, Torbjørn.
I saw that. Yeah,
someone went Bastion. Sinatra was Attack Moira. Like, it was nutty, and they just spanked him up and down. Like, it was so fun to watch. So the World Cup is a lot of fun. Things will get more serious when they have to play against Canada, I think, because Canada actually has some killers on that team. But I love Overwatch. We should have just talked about Overwatch the whole damn time.
I could talk about it all day. Seriously.
What do you think about the meta right now? We're extending this show, guys. We're going to go an extra 10 because we have a couple news stories that I think are important to get to. But before we do, what are you thinking of the current Season 12?
What is the meta? Is it still the same? Like, I haven't played too much competitive, but I don't know. Like, I feel like every game is like Ryan Zarya. Oh, you're not playing Ryan Zarya? You suck. Get out.
Dive was nutty there for a while where everyone was diving. But now, like, on Contenders, where Contenders ended, because what's crazy is Overwatch League plays, like, they don't play on the current patch.
Oh, okay.
Like, it's pretty structured when they move up.
But you're talking about, like, the pro meta?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I don't really follow the pro meta, to be honest.
So up in Masters level, they're not using pro meta?
Not really. Okay, you know what really annoys me is, like, every other, like, game, everyone's like, let's run goats, guys. And then, you know, it's three tank, three healer, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But it never works for me. It never works. And I don't know why it spreads so much. But that is the one thing I don't like about the meta, is people will, like, kind of pressure you into running that comp.
Oh, dude, it's even worse at Golden Plat. Because people see it on Overwatch League and they want to jump in and everyone thinks they could Widow carry on every map.
Yeah.
Because Sure4 does it.
Yeah.
Like, it's very frustrating. That is a part. But, like, it was really crazy because at the end of Overwatch Contenders, there was teams running a pretty successful Wrecking Ball Sombra attack comp.
Yeah.
Like on, what was it, Route 66, I think? Mm-hmm. Because Sombra is just chilling in the back line, calling him out. And then as soon as the hack goes off, you have a Wrecking Ball dropping on your face, and then they just smash and then get out.
That is true. I am noticing a lot more Sombra. And it's really annoying when you're the one getting hacked all the time.
Yeah. Well, it's the same when you were talking about being Genji. I was like, oh, you were one of the players where I'm like, oh, fucking Genji. I hate this guy. Someone take out Genji.
They have a lot of counters against you now.
Yeah.
Brigitte.
That's true. Oh,
don't get me started on Brigitte.
Oh, yeah. Stunned, man.
Yeah.
Have they nerfed her yet?
They've just been increasing her stun cooldown.
Yeah,
so they like, just
second by second, it feels like. Like every patch, like, oh, we added another second just to see if you guys are happy.
Good God.
I like playing as her, though. Like, she's a little pretty much. Fun. Well, she should be your favorite because it is the Tracer one-shot wipeout thing.
Well, that's true.
If you got that combo down, any Tracer who is within a whip of your range should be dead. If not, then you just get really toxic and yell at your Brigitte.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that everybody says her name different.
Brigitte.
Baggett.
Bridget. Brigitte. Brigitte. Brigitte.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be Brigitte.
Everybody. It's supposed to be Brigitte. Yeah. That's how Jeff Kaplan pronounces it anyway.
Oh, well, if it's Jeff Kaplan says it.
I mean, I take that to be what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
But everybody has a different word for her name.
I said it like that for a while, but then I got lazy. It's like,
you're like, fuck that extra syllable.
Yeah.
Let's call it B.
Three syllables is too much.
Watching the pro scene for Overwatch has been pretty crazy in the last couple of weeks because they're starting to announce all of their roster releases. Mm. So no one's really talking about their new signings yet. I believe the signing period is still going on, but it's on Reddit and all over the place. You could actually see the schedule, but they're running it like an NBA. So there's like a release period, a signing period, but it's kind of different because you have all these expansion teams coming on, so they get a fair shot to start trialing players.
Right.
But a lot of the stands, the Overwatch stands on Twitter, are just losing their minds every time someone gets released.
You are a social media guy, aren't you?
What?
Stands.
What?
Stands.
What?
No, you spend a lot of time on Twitter.
I spend a lot of, yeah,
spend
I do.
A lot of time on Twitter.
I mean, that's what I get paid to do. So we should establish I do spend a lot of time. So stans, as Slim Shady penned back in the early 2000s, is someone who's like a crazy avid
fan.
Like a stalker fan. And there's a thing called stan Twitter.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of different Twitters. There's like Scottish Twitter. There's everything Twitter. Just gaming Twitter.
Yeah.
And stan Twitter is another one. So you see they have their own memes and culture at this point. Yo, stan Twitter, you know what song this is? Like, that was a crazy meme going around a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
But so when anytime someone gets released, these stans are so attached to the players that it's just meltdowns on social media. Oh, my God. They'll never play again.
I just got into that new thing, Reddit, and I've been following different subreddits. As they're called.
That's how Reddit works.
They're called, yes.
And one of the ones I followed was Overwatch. And when I went to it, I followed Overwatch, but then I followed specifically Overwatch League. And there was a lot of like this person released, and people were just losing their crap.
The one to follow is Competitive Overwatch.
Competitive Overwatch.
Yeah, that's the primary subreddit. Where do you go for your Overwatch information, or do you pursue it outside of just playing?
I mostly just play, but I am sub to Overwatch, just the regular subreddit.
That's like good for like the general stuff. You want to know what events are coming up or the skins and that, you know, if you're into the game itself. But the competitive Overwatch Reddit is basically about the pros and the pro metas and things like that, and interviews with the players and things. But I was pretty sad to see my boy Numlocked got dropped from Valiant, but he took it super well, and I know that he fucking hated being on the bench and felt like it kind of I think it stifled his growth. So there's a lot of dudes out there. There's 8 new expansion teams all picking up 12-man rosters, you know, in theory. So there's going to be a lot of call-ups from contenders. And that's why, like, people who are, like, at that pro collegiate level, like, they're going to start getting opportunities to go up to contenders while these guys are getting pulled up. Hats off to Blizzard for making such a good, like, farming system. Like, games like Smite are struggling because there's not really a good player base or a way for dudes to go from being really good to pros.
Yeah.
Overwatch has that shit covered in spades. And you're going to see a lot of exciting stuff in the next few weeks, like when the teams are starting to announce their names is going to be super hype. Once you start seeing some of the big roster moves, it's going to be hype. Like,
yeah, it's going to be really good. It's going to be really good ramping up until the next season.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's... That was
Emma,
No, I was going to say, there's one more thing that we have not talked about yet that I know everybody's very excited for.
Please.
Iron Fist,
well,
season 2.
That's it.
Two.
That's all we have.
The show, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you guys.
Follow us on Twitter, at @videogamebank.
You know, go fuck yourselves.
Oh, go ahead. Talk about...
Iron Fist season 2 dropped. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's worth talking about. So I know everybody's very excited for this. Mm-hmm.
So
patiently
excited.
Waiting with bated breath.
Yeah.
But in all seriousness, If you follow me on Twitter, any of the places, you might know that I do this thing every single time Marvel puts out a show on Netflix. It drops at midnight Pacific time, which is our time. I start it at midnight on the dot, and I blow through the whole season. And I just watch it in one sitting. And I don't know why I do this, but it's tradition now. So I did this with Iron Fist again this year. And it is good.
That's
it's
it?
It's good. Like, that's just, like, the base level. It's good. Which I wasn't, we know I was hoping for. And yeah. They did exactly what I had mentioned on the show before, which is that they learned from their mistakes in season one. They improved upon things that existed in season one while still keeping them to the core of the show, while other things they completely took out. I'm trying to be, like, a little vague because I don't want to give spoilers. I know it just came out.
Yeah.
But there are certain, like, there are certain aspects of Danny's personality that are just gone now. And you don't miss them.
Okay.
Because Danny was by far the worst part of Iron Fist season one.
The main character was the worst
part
of the show.
The main character was the worst part of the show. I will say it feels a little bit like that as well. Here he does fall short of the other side characters, but this season it feels more like that speaks more to how good the side characters are as opposed to how terrible he is.
Here's my question, because this is what really pulled me out of season one, and I just stopped watching, like, not even halfway through. Specifically his fight choreography
was so bad in season one.
Was that improved?
Yes.
Okay, because season one, there were scenes where you could literally see him, he's in a fight, you could see him drop his fists and mentally prepare for, okay, the next one, hand goes here.
Yeah.
And so that's gone.
That's so much better. So the first scene of the show, the first, like, the opening scene of season two is an incredible fight scene.
Is it in a hallway?
It's not in a hallway.
Oh, then
there's
I don't care.
No
yeah.
hallway
no,
fight.
It's not
here.
In a hallway. I don't care.
Yeah, if it's not a hallway fight scene, then
hallway fight scenes are a staple.
It can kick rocks.
Wait for Daredevil season three.
Okay.
Wait for that. We'll get ours.
Is every time on low life thugs.
Exactly.
It's the first scene of every superhero.
It's the first scene of every. And that I thought about that when I watched it. I was like, all right, it's the opening. Like, the last season of Daredevil did it.
Yeah.
I want to say the Punisher did it. Like, where the first scene is just like a big, like, oh, this is what they're up to now. They're fighting more guys.
Fighting guys.
But that was definitely, that was seriously improved this season. The fight choreography. Because that was the hard part about season one, is that this guy, his whole thing is that he's like the king of martial arts. That's his superpower, is his martial arts. And it was fucking terrible.
He has one job. Has to be good at fighting.
It's one job.
And you pair Daredevil season one and Iron Fat season one. And it's a new superhero I'm working on. And it's Fat Iron Man. And you put those side by side, and Daredevil is a way better martial artist than Iron Fist.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, like, done. You get those two in a hallway, Iron Fist is not walking away.
So this season, they vastly improved on that. So we talked about this before, they got a new showrunner, they got new writers, I want to say they got a new fight choreographer. Everything is... The story is there, like, the characters are the same, but everything's different.
Okay.
Nothing feels...
The story's there
it in the first season, but everything's better, which is exactly what you want. You want the characters to stay, you know, what they are. You don't want to, like, completely scrap the whole thing and restart, but they were able to save it, which is what I was hoping they would do. They were able to take what they had, learn from their mistakes, and save it,
so
which I think says a lot about
it. It's improved. Okay, we'll take that. But this is where the rubber meets the road. How does it rank to the other seasons and Netflix series that have been out already?
I would put it definitely above Jessica Jones season two.
That's not hard to do. Okay.
I would definitely put it above the second half of Daredevil season two. Again, not hard.
Now you're picking nits.
See, I'm... Well, because Daredevil season 2 is two different
is
shows.
Is it good or bad? Is it top shows. Table, mid-shelf?
It's mid-shelf.
Okay.
I wouldn't put it at the top because there's so much that's at the top. Luke Cage season 2 is at the top for me. Daredevil season 1 is at the top. Jessica Jones season 1 is at the top. It doesn't rank up there, but it's not low-tier crap. It's very enjoyable.
Okay.
And one of the things they did that I didn't realize until I was at the end of the show is there's only 10 episodes this season, which at first, on the one hand, I'm pissed off about. Because it was good. It was so good that I wanted more.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted more, but at the same time, I would rather that they get 10 10 episodes of good content, then take 10 episodes of content and try to stretch it out to 13.
Yeah, shoehorn like a couple extra episodes that didn't belong or something.
And of course, the best part of the show is still the best part of the show.
The end.
Colleen Wing.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
This is still the Colleen show, season one. And she is still killing it this season. She runs this shit. She takes care of business. She runs everything. And that is still the case. She's amazing.
Here's my second big question. Do I need to watch season one to watch season two?
Generally, I would never say that you don't have to watch the first season. With this one, yes. You can get away with a recap.
All right. Good to know.
Because can I get away with the recap that happens?
Yes.
Yeah. Can I get away with the recap that happens before the first episode?
I don't know, because I didn't play for me. So I don't know what it was. Because I watched the last episode of the first season and then jumped into the first episode of the second season. I didn't get the recap. It just was like, whoop, here you go.
It's hard to tell Emma's feedback on this, though, because although you do have a pretty strange way of watching it, like you're basically speed watching it. Like you watch it all back to back to back in one sitting, probably quite delirious by the time you're done. Because what time did it launch?
It launched at midnight. I finished at about 8:20 in the morning.
Yeah, see...
I will say, though, I have notes.
So take everything she said with a grain of salt.
At about 5 o'clock in the morning, she's like, this is the best show I've ever seen. This is fucking amazing. I'm calling Wing.
I am calling Wing. No, because I was able to tell at 5 in the morning that the first season sucked. But I actually took notes. Like part. I have a set of notes on my phone. Like every episode, I have like pages because I didn't want to. It was the same thing. I didn't want to forget anything because I went to sleep and forgot.
She's
stuff.
A nerd, everybody. She's a nerd.
Yes, welcome to my life.
I think it's dedication because she brought that to the show.
Yeah,
it's good.
I did. It's right
appreciate
there.
It. And we talked about it. We also forgot to talk about Elon Musk smoking weed with Joe Rogan, and then like everyone. Leaving his company.
The memes were the best part of that. Like I told you guys about the one I saw that was the funniest thing was is the one with him smoking weed. Is the caption's like, "What if I like put one of my cars into space?" Like it's hilarious.
I watched most of it so far. I kind of was watching it in chunks on YouTube.
Yeah.
I want to just go through and watch the whole thing now. He's way more awkward than I thought. He would be, but
he's a weird guy.
Yeah,
he's a weird dude.
He was weird, but he was like drinking and then smoking there at the end, and then
he just needs to stop everything he's doing publicly.
I'm glad
just run your company and stop.
I'm glad he did the whole lighting up a Joe thing, though.
Yeah,
I feel like I don't know. Just hearing the conservative reactions to it was just silly on Fox News the next day.
Oh yeah,
on how like he's reckless. You know, it's like
because he does something that's legal.
Yeah, I'm sure they say as they go pour a bottle of whiskey that same night.
Speaking of, let's go real quick. Go back to Spider-Man. J. Jonah Jameson's podcast.
Alex Jones.
Does that not sound like something that would be on like Fox News Radio?
He is 100% Alex Jones.
He's the Alex Jones of that game.
Which I think might be too nice to Alex Jones.
Gary was talking about polish. That is polish.
That is
because like. He'll interview people you've saved like an hour beforehand.
Yeah.
And it's like, I remember like the dude who was the copycat Spider-Man. Oh. He was a guest on the J. Jonah podcast.
It can also go the other way because there was one of those side missions where you're supposed to like chase down a car and I lost it because I was too far away. And like 20 minutes later, an episode of the Jonah Jameson show came on and they were like, I was in this horrible car because there was a police chase going on. And you know what the worst part is? Spider-Man was in the area and he didn't do anything about it. Yeah. Oh, so if you miss it comes back to bite you in the ass.
That's amazing.
I was Insomniac, so mad.
I know you guys are big fans of the show, so you guys listen. You guys did a really good job.
You did a good job.
Regardless of Puddlegate.
The game is called The Rabbit and the Owl and it's available on the Steam store. Gary, please tell people where they could learn more about you and your team, your game company.
Well, most of the information is on the Steam store page, but we do have a company website at formalsheep.com. So that's
check it out. Emma, did you already beat the game into submission? Or are you going to do a second playthrough or what?
I think I'm going to do a second playthrough with my mom because she really she was at PAX with me when I took her on PAX.
Please tell me you're streaming it.
I might. It depends on where we are.
I'm also planning on releasing a set of extra levels that didn't make it into the base game.
Oh.
You just made Emma's night. Yay.
Yeah, so because I had too many puzzles and there was just way too many hard puzzles. So I took some of them out to like improve the pacing.
Okay.
So the bonus levels should be pretty challenging.
Yeah. Nice.
You heard it here for breaking news, everybody. David Webb, what's your stream schedule looking like this week?
This week, I will be more than likely playing Spider-Man. I'll probably do a stream tomorrow night. Streamers, I'll do it tomorrow night. Podcast listeners, this comes out on Monday, so tonight I will be doing one. And Tuesday. Okay. And then we'll see from there.
Emma Skies, I know you are the worst at making your schedule because you do it usually on Sundays, but what do you think it's going to be next week?
Next week, we start Tomb Raider on Wednesday. So Monday and Tuesday, we'll be finishing up Spider-Man, Tomb Raider Wednesday, and then we go from there.
All right, everyone. This was a great show. If you do listen to the podcast, this is where I get on Corey's soapbox. If you listen to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Baby Dribbler, Wanky Dolphin, any of those podcasting services.
Are these real things, or are you just making them up?
No, they are all 100% real.
That's odd.
Check it out. Yeah, no, those ones are all... I did happen to make up Wheezy Sleazel.
Okay.
That is a completely made up one. But
it's
the rest,
Sleazy Weasel.
I just messed it up. Yeah. But if you do listen to the podcast, if you're a podcast listener, you should get the full experience one of these days by checking out the Twitch stream, twitch.tv/videogame_bang, where you can interact with us live. And then the best part is that we do an after show where we just kind of rap, talk about the things that didn't make it onto the show. Me and Emma are going to have a cage fight tonight, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
So if you want
to
watch
it, it might be tonight. We'll have to do it another time because we have a lot to set up.
I left my cage in my other house. Yeah.
This is never going to happen.
But when I get the cage ready, we're going to do that. And then people who are listening to the stream live week in, week out, sub to the podcast. It's VGB, but you could take it on the road with you. And the audio quality is usually much better. And you could share it with your friends. You could listen to it at lunch while you're on your breaks. It's super cool. And most importantly, rate it 5 stars. That's the key right there. Give us that 5-star rating. Type a few little happy comments in there. Say how much you enjoy the show. That helps the show get more exposure and blows us up even more. We also, this isn't a charity podcast. I don't know if we've ever mentioned that, but we're trying to make some bread here. So you can follow us on patreon.com if you want to help support a podcast in need, as well as Twitch. If you could hit that subscribe button, $5 a month, you get access to our special emotes. And it would just mean a lot to us personally. But that's it. That's the show. Thank you guys for listening. For David Webb, Gary, Emma Skies, my name is Corey, saying you've just been banged.